Hello, everyone. This is Northwest Sports Talk. I am Michael, and I'm your host. I used to have a podcast that was under the name The Night Before Podcast. So if you're seeing this and going, what's Northwest Sports Talk? It's The Night Before Podcast. Different name, same guy. But this one, I wanted to focus more just on sports in the Pacific Northwest. Almost said Pacific Northwest. It's about the Pacific Northwest, the sports that we have here. Obviously, there's going to be a little bias with some of the talk because I'm here in Seattle, Washington. So if you're anybody who listens that's not in Seattle, Washington, is like, I want to hear about my Northwest team. Well, make sure that you send in voice messages through Spotify app. You can do that. So I could talk about those teams, but for the most part, I'm going to talk about the teams that are here in Washington and some that are here in the Northwest, like the Blazers at some point. But today, I will not be covering them. So today, I am covering three topics, really. Basically, an episode to knock off the rust before I do another one. But this first topic is about Mariners baseball. We've had a lot happen since we've had talk about sports between me and you, the viewers and listeners. We haven't been able to cover any of those big topics, so I thought I'd basically try to share some of them with you, but none other than the Seattle Mariners baseball team, who not only broke the curse of not being to the playoffs in 21 years, they won a playoff series. Now, before I talk about all of that and get into what a great year it was, I want to get into what this year is going to be. This year is a year that has high expectations. It's a year that we need to really keep our eye on because we have high hopes on and high hopes for this year. We want to see them do well because we've never seen a Mariners baseball team do anything other than either come short of whatever they were fighting for or just not even get there in the first place. And normally it's not getting there in the first place. They've only been to the playoffs, I believe, four times, and they've relatively made some great moments, but those great moments are there because we have so few of them. So with these great expectations come building blocks. These building blocks for our organization are the foundation of what they're going to build on, obviously. But there's no other big expectation than Julio Rodriguez. He's our best player on this team, obviously. But not only is he the best player, he's also the most – he's going to be the most criticized player on this team coming up. We're in a love affair with Julio Rodriguez. And don't get me wrong, he's – the most characterizing, just captivating guy right now in baseball. But he isn't the mature man that everybody wants him to be at a certain point. Now, he's a great player. He's very mature and everything. But what I'm saying is he's not at that age in baseball where the baseball knowledge is going to come in, but he's still raw talent and he's still playing at a high level. And I don't want to sound like I'm talking down on Julio Rodriguez right now, but there's a lot of expectations for him, but I think he will meet them. But as Mariner fans, we all know that with his expectations is not only just him being the great player. Cause I think what we always got caught up in with Ichiro and with Ken Griffey Jr. was them being the superstar on a team where they were obviously better than the whole team and everybody pulled towards them. And that was fine. I mean, that's what teams do. That's what stars for your team do. They bring in the crowds. But with those teams, now, I wasn't around to get to see all of the great moments with the Ken Griffey Jr. teams. But growing up watching Ichiro, one thing that pops into my mind now is the individuality of Ichiro. He was one guy. He, yes, was on a team, and yes, he was on the Mariners playing for them, but some of our best moments of him is just him. It's not the whole team. Our favorite moment of Ken Griffey Jr. is a dog pile on home base in the wild card against New York, or in the divisional series against New York. So we have that picture of him in the team. We have this picture of Ichiro, and it's kind of just Ichiro. So even though, yes, after Ken Griffey Jr. had that moment, after that, it wasn't a whole lot of team after that. It was kind of just, we're rooting for Ken Griffey Jr., and he's our star. Yes, you had other names on that team like Jay Buhner and Edgar Martinez who captivated this team, but at the end of the day, we celebrate one of the greatest baseball player in our eyes of all time. And it brings a certain level of individuality to that person of isolating them from this group, where he forced the trade to go to Cincinnati, and then you bring in Mike Cameron, and this team flourishes with Ichiro at the helm. But Ichiro was, again, this one guy who is just brought in this crowd by himself. Whereas Julio, it's almost a humble feeling you get from him, where it's he's just a guy on the team, and him being great is just an add-on to that. And when Julio brings that to the Mariners, that's when they flourish. His stats aren't going to be the guy who carry – he will have amazing stats in his career. He's going to be a superstar for this team in the future, and he's literally on the doorstep of it, maybe even there. But his expectations are not, I think, of how can he play for this team, because we saw it last year. We saw – that he can play in the major leagues. What we need to see out of Julio is when this team hits its worst, you're the guy that's going to have to step up and talk to them and bring them back. You can't just not say anything at that point. I'm not saying when they had a slump this last year, he didn't say anything, but early in the year, they were in a slump. They were the run they had to go on to get to the playoffs was all because they had a horrible start to this season. They were horrible. And Julio was so young at the time on the team. It almost feels like by the time that happened to the playoffs, Julio aged like 4 years on the team. It almost felt like, and it feels like that now. But in order for this team to get to where they need to go, Julio needs to be able to be the guy who stands up and brings this team together. Because when they didn't have that last year, and I believe it was Justin Upton who came in and was the reason they finally started banding together, then you saw them finally flourish. But it took a guy from the outside almost. Whereas Julio needs to be the guy in that locker room this next time that happens, because it's a long season and it will happen. He needs to be the guy to bring this team up. He needs to be the leader of that locker room now. He cannot be just fun Julio in the locker room. Don't get me wrong, you can still be fun and be the leader, but you can't be you can't let this team get down. You have to bring them up. You have to elevate them, not only with their play, but with how they feel. And honestly, at the same time, those are almost the Mariners' expectations, because this team last year we fell in love with, but they had a lot of room to grow. And Luis Castillo, acquired at the deadline last year, he will have a full year with us. Honestly, this talking about all this, this is not taking into account injury. This is talking about just them on paper right now. With Luis Castillo, they have a Cy Young Award winner in the making, it almost feels like, with him. Or at least George Kirby. But Seattle needs more out of this offense. That's where Teoscar Hernandez comes in. And I was talking about this with yesterday. Teoscar Hernandez, I think, was probably one of the most underappreciated players on that Blue Jays team. So much so that the Blue Jays are still ranked, I believe it was by MLB TV, third in batting order throughout all of MLB. And they lose a guy like Teoscar Hernandez, who is the only guy in that series against Seattle who actually swung the bat and got on base and got them runs. One of the few guys who actually consistently did it in the first and second game. So if you lose a guy like that, that tells me you're losing a guy of stature in your locker room. So something's telling me that his addition is going to be a great one for us. But will it pay off? I'm not so sure on that one, honestly, because I remember the days when we had Richie Sexton and Adrian Beltre, and it just didn't pay off. Adrian Beltre goes to Texas, and he blossoms again. But we as a team need to see him play his role, and more than likely, we need to see Jarrett Kelenic elevate himself. He's shown it in spring training, but we've seen it a lot. Guys play great in spring training, and it just doesn't reflect what they're doing in the majors. Julio, Ichiro, maybe Ken Griffey Jr. as an exception for this ball club before, but them trusting him with left field out there, it feels like they might throw Haggerty out there too. He's shown the ability to play in the outfield. Kelenic's going to have to be what we need him to be, and which is about a 230 batting average hitter. And I'd sign up for that right now at the mid-season with him, I don't know, 20 home runs. That'd be fun. But this Mariners team has a lot of expectations in terms of people, I think, are saying, are we good enough to win it all? And personally, right now, I don't think we should be a favorite, but I think we have something to win. We could win a World Series this year. Because when you're in a race for a World Series, you got to think of this. You always need a little luck. Everybody has a little luck along the way. Whether or not it's a clear as day, sometimes it's hidden. And you just don't see it. And then you realize, oh, well, we got it lucky there. Like missed calls or calls that weren't there and they called them anyway. Like in the Super Bowl with the Eagles. Some people were pissed off that holding call was at the end. Some people agreed with it. It's just how it goes. But this Mariners team's expectations right now is probably, I would say, leaning on wild card right now, because right, we just can't. Astros got better somehow. They got better in the offseason, and they got better by addition of subtraction more than addition at this point, because how I see it is they lost Justin Verlander, and some people would go, you just lost a Cy Young winner. Well, he is aging and he's on the Mets now. People on the Mets have the worst luck somehow. I mean, not trying to talk down on anybody, but look at Edwin Diaz. It's the Mets' fate. That's how the Mets are. It's just what happens to them. So Justin Verlander going to them, it probably sounds – to me, it feels like it's a payoff for Houston. So with that being said, I don't think Seattle overall is better than Houston, but I think they can hold their own against this team this year. they have somewhat of a feeling like the Golden State Warriors that last year they got swept out of the playoffs by the Clippers, and after that, the dynasty was created. It has that sort of feel to it where it's like, yes, Seattle lost to them in the playoffs, but did they really get demoralized? There was demoralizing losses, but they showed that they can still hang with this team. It took everything of Houston to beat Seattle in a sweep. It wasn't just, oh, this team is just overwhelming them. No, they made them work for it. And that is the reality of the Mariners, is they're going to have to make everybody work for it. They're not going to be given this. Last year, I believe, not people took them lightly, but it's the Mariners. There's the notion, okay, they've never done anything. When are they going to start now? But they're not going to get that benefit of the doubt that the team they saw earlier in 2022 is going to be the same team they see at the end of 2022 season in the postseason. That's not going to happen. You're not going to get the benefit of people looking at you and seeing that you might not be as good as them. No, they know you're as good as them, and they're ready. And Texas has gone a long way to spend some money on pitching, even though I don't believe it's going to work out. But they've spent money on it, and until Jacob DeGrom's hurt, he's in Texas right now playing for the Rangers. And that's dangerous because those are hard-fought games you're going to have to play. You're the team that travels the most in Major League Baseball. So this division's not going to be easy for them. And as much as I'd love for them to win the division, it's going to have to continue to be they have to play great all season because that's what the Astros do. And if you don't do that, you're not going to be where the Astros are. And right now, even though, yes, I think we have the talent to match them, I would argue we do not have the same consistency as them. Last year was 1 year. They have a dynasty. It's just how it is right now. And it's okay because you're not where the Astros are right now. The Astros are, you could argue, at the back end of a dynasty because they have some aging guys. But they've also shown with prospects that they can continue this dynasty. So they're not going away. And you're going to have to make sure you keep pace with them, which they haven't shown they can do. They haven't shown they can keep pace with the Houston Astros. They haven't shown they can at least match up well against them in terms of winning series. As much as I talk about how confident they should be on that, us as fans, we should not be that confident. We should not be that confident in us beating the Astros right now. As much as I'd love to say, yes, I believe it, right now, the Astros are better than us, and they're going to be better than us right now. So if they continue to be better than us right now, we need to focus on what we can do as a wild card team in the future. So with that being said, I do want to get into the Mariners playoff run from last year at least, where we had a great 3 years since I recorded my last episode in sports here in Seattle. I mean, we've gotten to see a Mariners baseball team break a 21-year drought. We've gotten to see a hockey team be born here. And we've seen the Seattle Sounders win a CONCACAF Cup, Champions League Cup, which no American soccer team has ever done before. And they got to play in the World Club World Cup, which they are going to be in again this upcoming year. And we've seen a lot of changes happen to the Seattle Seahawks since the last time I recorded an episode. And to start with the Mariners playoff run, that was something that just felt amazing to be a part of. We got to see something that's never happened before, at least in my son's lifetime. He's never gotten to see it. I got to finally show him a playoff game while also getting to experience one for the first time as an adult. And I got to say, it reminded me a lot of watching the Cleveland Browns win a playoff game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, there wasn't a lot of I can't remember if there was any fans at that game or not. But watching that, I was like, wow, you could just imagine how these people in Cleveland felt. Almost like when they won that game with Baker Mayfield coming in as a backup, and then they had all those Bud Lights get unlocked for all the fans in Cleveland. But it was just a feeling of relief of watching this team just continue to win. I mean, it was just series after series where you would just watch this team set the bar higher for themselves last year. And I know I just totally killed all your hopes and dreams with Mariners reality check over in the last few minutes, but as much as I say that's what we should expect, it is what we should expect because we're Mariners fans. Let's not get ahead of ourselves and say we're going to go win a World Series. Let's get to a World Series first. But it damn sure felt like we were going to get to one last year. It really did, because we just felt we had the pitching and the team. And knock on wood, we stay healthy. We have a team that is so exciting to look at. And it's all thanks to the season they put together last year with Julio going to the All-Star game, with them breaking, I guess you could say it was a curse. Nobody really called it that, but that seems to be the baseball thing to do, is call everything a curse. They just put together a magnificent season for us. And it was something great to just be a part of. Kind of like Kraken hockey. We have this young team that is showing so much promise right now, opposed to a 2022 season that was really hard to watch. And I went to one game there and for the Kraken last year, and I swear, you spent more time just wanting to check out the arena than actually watching them get massacred, which they did. I believe it was like 7-2 against the Colorado Avalanche. You are now getting to see another young team come up and play their ass off for us. And it's fun because it's their potential playoff team right now. They're going to make the playoffs, it almost looks like, faster than the Mariners did as an organization. I think the only team to get to the playoffs faster than them as of all these teams is the Seattle Sounders, who got to it in their first year. So watching the Kraken, I don't have the most knowledge about hockey, but it's a great feeling to know we have a team here that we can root for, to get invested in, to learn about, to get more familiarized with the sport. Because we never had a reason to. They've just done so many things for this organization has just done so many things for this community too, starting with the up north with the community iceplex that they let kids literally come skate right next to these players who practice there. The players literally will practice at this facility while also getting to see these kids. These kids get to see the players, and it's almost inspirational for them. It's a great place. They're put so much money into this arena while making it so, honestly, beautiful. And the campus there is beautiful. They're just doing an overall great job with this team, and it's just great to see. And, like, I feel like they learned that foundation from the Seattle Sounders in some sort, with them practicing at Starfire for so long and their lower level teams playing at Starfire. They were so in the community that they hadn't, the city had no chance at hating them, because they've just set the standard for an organization in the MLS, and they've just been a sound organization. They've done great jobs building that facility over in Renton, and building a facility in South Center Mall, not South Center Mall, but over in Tequila. They've just done great jobs investing in this community. And it shows you, you can build your fan base by doing that, not by spending money on the big and flashy things, kind of like some organizations in California, like the LA Rams, where it was like, you built your organization off the big and flashy things, even though, yes, that is the big and flashy city. But unless you continue that trend, you're not going to be able to maintain that. That's why it was nice to see just the Seahawks almost this last year pick, we can't stick with the big and flashy anymore. We can't stick with what we are assuming was a forever partnership with Russell Wilson. And when they made those changes last year, that was really interesting, because you didn't think that something like that would ever have happened to this team. You never would have thought Richard Sherman would have been a 49ers jersey, but it happened. I mean, we would have never thought Bobby Wagner would have went to the LA Rams and played for the Rams. We've literally seen players of ours play for rivals of this team, former rivals of this team. And it's just the changes Seattle made in these last 3 years really set the foundation for what they did moving forward. And what they did last year was, we need to count on us. Instead of counting on Russ, almost, not trying to rhyme. They made sure that they bet on themselves rather than bet on what they already have in settling for that. They said, you know, he's a great player, but we can't just dump all of our stock into him anymore, because it's not panning out for us. And it was either you pick Pete or you pick Russ. It was that simple. And you know that. And they picked Pete. And as of right now, yeah, they picked right. So they did a great job just making the necessary changes they needed to do. And they're continuing to do that. They're continuing to do that. And it's just crazy, because we've had a whole year, whole 3 years since I've recorded a podcast. And you just see, like, all the changes. And it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy to see that we have such a sound foundation. If, let's say, one day the NBA ever wants to come back here. And it's great to see, because as a Seattle sports fan, you never thought you might be able to see it, because it wasn't pretty for a long time. All right, time to move on to something that, I mean, everybody wants to hear that lives in the city of Seattle and likes football. Talk about the Seattle Seahawks. So Seattle, like I was mentioning before, they made a lot of changes. They got rid of Bobby Wagner, and he went to L.A., and it was weird. Number one, it was weird seeing him in another team's uniform, but not only – it was weird not seeing him on our defense. Well, unless you didn't hear, Bobby Wagner is back. He's on a 1-year, $7 million deal with the Seattle Seahawks. And I think it's not only is it a great move for Seattle, it's a great move, I think, for Bobby Wagner, because he's at a certain point in his career where it's not just about, like, chasing a ring. He just tried to do that, and he's like, wow, how did that pan out for me? Didn't pan out very good because the Rams sucked last year. So he needed to take that into account when he was going to sign with a new team. And he had an opportunity. I mean, Dallas was right at the forefront saying, we want Bobby Wagner. And he decided to not go there, which I understand. I mean, I wouldn't want to go to Dallas either. But he just needed to find a spot for him to be in that made sense. Made sense for him in his career right now. And what makes sense for him is he wants to still play. And he can still play at a high level. And Seattle is a team that went to the playoffs last year, despite a lot of doubts. And they had a huge hole, which was at middle linebacker, believe it or not. And he fits the defense so well because he was the leader of it for so long. And when you lose a guy like Brooks, you can't just wait and try to get somebody else. Now, you did go get Devin Bush, which is a great acquisition. I think the only way you make that acquisition is when you go get Bobby Wagner, because it's been apparently known that Devin Bush can kind of be a hothead. So Bobby Wagner coming back not only solidifies them at the middle linebacking position, it solidifies them with their leader. Because it kind of, as much as Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams were going to be the leaders, Jamal went out week one, and Quandre, he's great, but he's not Bobby. And it's nothing against Quandre Diggs, but you're not Bobby Wagner. And you brought Jaron Reed back, but again, it's not Bobby Wagner. And you signed a lot of guys on the defensive line so far. So the addition of Bobby in there is bringing in what they've needed all along, is the guy to solidify the middle of the defense. And when you have a guy like that, it's hard to let him go. And when he's back out on the market, literally the year after he just had another career year, you got to bring him back. But that doesn't fill every hole with the Seattle Seahawks. One of the main holes for the Seattle Seahawks was defensive line. And they have draft picks this year that they need to use. Now, their offensive line was very bad too. But it was great at certain points because of the left and right tackles, Abraham Lucas and Charles Cross. But they just need to solidify that defensive and offensive line. Now, you got two first-round picks. I see a lot of people saying they should pick a wide receiver at number 20. I don't really agree with that. My train of thought is you need a nose tackle again, or a pass rusher on the outside, or you need to take a center. Because right now, as much as we don't believe in Aaron Baines right now, because we don't really know much about him, I mean, he's all you got on the outside right now. So you got Damian Lewis, you have Charles Cross, you have Abraham Lucas. You need to solidify the middle of your offensive line, though, because Damian Lewis can't play center for you. So in order to make that happen, you need to go get a center in the draft. I believe that they need to go do that. And I wouldn't use your number five pick on that. I'd probably use your number five pick on Will Anderson Jr. from Alabama. If I was Seattle, that's the pick I'm going for at that point. If he's right there on the board, that's the pick I want. If he's not, you got a decision to make, because do you want to take another defensive lineman that you maybe don't believe in, or do you want to reach and get a center? It'll be hard for them at that point. But they will make the right decision at five with getting a pass rusher. It's more about that number 20 pick, because if you don't get a guy that you, let's say they pull another, they just pull like a Christian Michael and get somebody horrible. Honestly, until these last two half years, Rashad Penny was a bust. And honestly, he was a bust his whole career for us. And with that being said, they're not great at making these first round picks. I mean, look at Jermaine Ifedi. Where's he at? I guarantee you he's either a second stringer practice squad or he's not in the league right now. So they just need to solidify that defense. In the middle of the defense, I think they're fine at safeties. I think Julian Love is a problem solved. I mean, you have Jamal Adams coming back. Whatever you do with him is fine, but your corners seem to be fine for right now. You are getting Trey Brown back this year. They'll be able to work him into the fold a lot more in this next year, and also, there's nothing left for this defense to fix other than this defensive line. They've cut a lot of ties, and they just need to get a pass rusher, and they need one bad. I mean, look at what Chase Young did for the Washington Commanders. Wanted to call them the Redskins. Almost called them the Redskins. The Washington Commanders, Myles Garrett with the Browns. These pass rushers are coming out and they're paying off. So if you go get the guy who is a phenomenal pass rusher at five, you will be secure. And if you get a really good center at that number 20 pick, you have two fifth-year options you can pick up on, two rookies at that point in their career. And you can mold them into what you need for this team. And what you need for this team is the middle of the defense and the middle of the offense need to be solidified. Now, I see a lot of people saying, let's maybe go for Bijan Robinson at number 20. I don't think that's a smart move. Or Smith and Jigba. It just doesn't seem like a smart move to reach for those two in the first round. Maybe in the second, definitely not in the first. If Jalen Carter's there in the second round, though, somehow, with your first pick in the second round coming up, you have to take him. Just saying. But I don't think he's making it out of the first round. Now, the big question a lot of people are asking, even though, yes, Seattle re-signed Geno Smith, who was a phenomenal surprise, even though some people are talking about drafting defense and drafting wide receivers, the other big question is, does Seattle go quarterback at number five? And is there a chance that Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud falls to them to number five? Now, the only reason I say you could see that happening is because of Will Levis. And even though, yes, we're all going to be like, well, right now we're pretty sure that C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young are what they're going to pick. Are we sure about that? because we were sure about that same thing. And then we were introduced to a guy named Zach Wilson a few years ago, and then he got picked number two by the Jets, and he's a bust. So people can get tricked into taking quarterbacks. And with a guy like Will Levis, who has the big arm to really pull you in, he has the size, he has everything on paper that you want for a quarterback. But I guarantee you he's not going to work. So you're going to see one of these guys probably fall. And if you have a Bryce Young sitting there at five for Seattle, do they take him? I would think they'd really consider it. And if he's there, do you consider maybe trading out of that pick and falling back? Seeing if you can get something more out of there. Give me your first rounder this year. Give me your first rounder next year, and maybe the year after that. If you really think you can get that quarterback of your dreams right there, why not try to get them all for what they're giving you? So Seattle, I think, should really look into the possibility of taking a quarterback at five, only if it is C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young, who would end up probably sitting behind Geno Smith. But at the end of the day, I think they're going to have to go defensive line. It's what's the number one thing that – it's what they need. They don't need a quarterback technically right now. Even though, yes, Geno Smith isn't the long-term solution, you have him right now, and he's under contract. So right now they don't need a quarterback. And if they go get defensive line, you can make a good – and he contributes in a big way this next year, you can make an argument that they could go toe-to-toe with San Francisco depending on how Trey Lance or Brock Purdy plays. So Seattle – do I think Seattle should take a QB? No. Seattle should not take a QB at five. They should definitely go defense. But if you have that pick and that guy is there, you need to strongly consider it, because guys with talent like that don't come around that often. And especially when you know you can be the one that molds them into what you want them to be instead of just throwing them to the fire. Because right now, if I'm a rookie, I'm praying to God that Will Levis is taken instead of me. And you're falling to five. Honestly. Because it'd be amazing for you as a rookie. You get to be on a team where technically they don't need you right now. All you get to do is learn and play behind a guy like Geno Smith, who's a vet in the NFL, who can tell you, hey, this can all be gone one day. And you may be sitting behind a guy like Russell Wilson, and that guy doesn't get traded away. So do I think we have the system in Seattle to support a rookie quarterback? Of course. We did it with Russ. But do I think we need it? No, absolutely not. So if I'm Seattle again, at five, I would take a defensive lineman. But in this draft, if they address everything they feel like they need to address and they get the best players that they can get in this draft, I mean, obviously, sky's the limit, but Seattle had a great draft last year. Seattle hasn't had a great draft in a few years outside of that. And maybe it was because they weren't drafting for need, but it kind of felt like they were. So we can hope that they're going to do this again. I want to see them do it again. But we've seen a lot of screw-ups by this team in the NFL draft. And, of course, every team does. But these ones have been recently, like taking Kristen Michael right before Travis Kelce. Yeah, if you didn't know that as a Seahawks fan, now you do. We took Kristen Michael before Travis Kelce in the NFL draft. You we have to trust them, yes, but obviously. But when I say, when I talk about them drafting a quarterback, the reason I talk about that is because they've had some questionable decisions in the last few years in the draft, besides last year. So if we can get something great out of that, that's great. But right now, Seattle is a scary team in the draft because you don't know who they're taking, because they're never taking who you think they are. So that will be the end of this podcast. Again, I'm hoping to put out an episode every Wednesday. Hopefully when you wake up in the morning, it'll be uploaded and everything. Please come back and listen. I'm going to try my hardest to continue this as best as I can and knock more rust off. I know this one probably just sounded like me dragging it out, but like I said, knocking a lot of rust off. If I can only get better from this, then it'll be a lot of fun. So thank you for listening and have a great day.